This episode is made possible in part by the patrons of RHAP, who allow me to make more podcasts than Debbie can do pull-ups. And for that, I am eternally grateful. To find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron, visit robhasawebsite.com/patron or click on the banner at the top of robhasawebsite.com. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's a man whose accuracy in picking winners could best be described as like Stephen Fishback with a slingshot. Rob Cisternino, hello everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast voicemail edition here for episode number 5 of Survivor Co. Wrong. Very excited to bring in our good friend Angie Kontz. Famous for the Angie Kontz character type system, which we discussed at the beginning of every Survivor season. And we're going to talk with Angie about how things are going so far. And I think pretty so far so good based on some of the predictions that Angie made. Her predictions are going a little better than mine so far in the season. So we'll talk about all that. Plus, we'll take your voicemails, check in with the Survivor social media, and I'm sure much, much more here on the voicemail edition of the podcast. Episode recap with Sophie Clark. Very fun. Sophie is always great. So knowledgeable about the game. Check that out if you haven't heard that podcast. Plus, really fun Survivor know-it-alls and our exit interview with Anna from Thursday morning. As well, make sure you don't miss any of these podcasts. When you subscribe, go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. Or how about that Rob Has a Podcast app? Get the Rahap app at robhasawebsite.com/app and get everything from Rob Has a Podcast, post-show recaps, reality TV, Rahap ups, all in one place for iOS and Android. All right, I'm very excited to have our guest here today for the voicemails. You've heard her in the preseason and probably, I think, for the last 5 seasons. I think going back to the original Brains versus Brawn versus Beauty. She is the creator of the Kontz character type system. And here she is back on the voicemails. Welcome, Angie Kontz.
Angie. Your character types really inform us. Angie. Angie. Can't you just tell us who will win?
Oh, I should have to. A voice like an angel.
Oh my God, I love it. Oh, that was... Oh, I'm so excited he did that.
Yes. Wow. That took him 4 months to write that. So great job, Tim. Angie, welcome back. Yes, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you for having me after this particular episode. It was amazing. Oh my God.
Yes. Well, I said, okay, well, let me go on all the spoiler sites and try to figure out, okay, what's going to be the best episode to have Angie? And I thought that this was it. So, no. Luck of the draw, and sometimes you get lucky, sometimes not, just like a Survivor tribe swap.
It happens. You never know what color you're going to get.
Yeah, the high variance on these episodes to voicemail ratio.
Sometimes you pull the red, sometimes you pull the blue.
Yeah, sometimes you pull the yellow.
Yeah. Yeah. That works out too sometimes.
Yes.
If you're 7 feet tall, it works out.
It works out. All right. So Angie, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing really great.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm really excited about this season because I felt like coming into this, that was like, we don't know exactly, you know, what this season is going to be like. And I felt like Jeff was really sort of downplaying it and like, but no, I've been so pleasantly surprised.
His hyperbole this year was definitely a little bit flaccid. I would say that for sure.
I would have described it, but okay.
I definitely, like, one of my mottos is definitely, like, the secret to happiness is through lowered expectations.
Yes.
And this season has delivered that in spades. I was excited about the premise because I do like the Brains versus Brawn versus Beauty theme, but I was not overly excited because they really did undersell it.
Yeah. Well, Angie, I'd love to just go back and sort of revisit your character type predictions that you made in the preseason, because I felt like that you were on to a couple things that you were really locked in on. Do you feel good about the system so far?
I do. I got to tell you, I know that you took a hit with Anna, but I am killing my draft. I am crushing it. It's like, yeah. I took Kyle, Jason, and Debbie in almost every single one. In fact, I think I took them in every single one, and I'm cleaning up.
Yeah.
Have you recovered yet? Are you all right?
Like, what's to recover from? You know, I don't get any money if they win. It would be nice, you know. I feel like that people are starting to forget that it was only, you know, 7 seasons ago that I did predict a winner. So, I mean, statistically, I think I'm doing fine. But, you know, people get a little antsy when you don't hit a winner in a while.
That's true. And I did see your face on Know It Alls last night. You did look like Probst when Caleb went down. You were like ashen, a little shocked, shaken up.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's just talk through a couple of these people that we've seen go out so far. And I felt like that the pick that you had predicted, I believe you predicted 18 out of 18. You said Liz Markham would be the first boot on this season. She ends up being the third. She's out the first person from her tribe. What was it about Liz that you really keyed into that you felt like that this was not going to go well for her?
Her intensity and her reliance on her intelligence. Mm. I thought She had an incredibly awake sharpness to her that I thought that she would have trouble seeing past the math into the humanity of the game. And I thought that she would kind of screw up the social element of it. And I think that's how it played out. She was very intense. She didn't realize how having such an obvious twosome with Peter was going to alienate the rest of her tribe. She wasn't checking in and nurturing the rest of her tribe properly. And she really got outplayed by Debbie.
What about some of the other players from this season? Now, if I recall, it was interesting that you came down to, you had your first place and second place finisher, and I believe it was you had Jason in the top position and Blondie herself, Alicia, in the second position. But you said, you know, I really don't have a good feel on Alicia. She could be one of two things. This one I'm not so sure about. But I just thought it was interesting that these two players who had such an intense rivalry and feud on the show, you had them sort of right there.
I did have them right there. And if you recall what I said about Alicia is I'm really nervous that she may not be the Aaron Brockovich and she may in fact be the Oh No You Didn't, mm-hmm. which is probably the widest variance you can have in this system. And I think she definitely proved herself to be the latter and not the Aaron Brockovich, which is really unfortunate.
Now, if you feel like, oh, I really got that wrong in terms of who she is, I know you say you don't change these, but would you ever go back and do a correction? Like, oh yeah, I obviously, yes.
If I am dead wrong, I will change it. And I did a bit of an experiment this year in that when we did Worlds Apart, I read a lot more articles and interviews with them preseason to try and get a better sense of their personalities. And at that time, I felt that it made it a little bit harder. Like I felt like it was harder for me to, like when I read Max Dawson's bio, I thought he's the specialist. And then when I read some interviews with him, I started to waver in my head a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I thought this time I'm just going with the bio and I'm just going with the CBS video. I'm going to keep it super pure. Okay. And when it came to Alicia, there was like just one line where she said, I have a short fuse. I go off on people that made me think, I'm not sure which one she is, and I guessed wrong. So I think had I read a little bit more, had I seen a little bit more of her personality, it would have been obvious because she was way more like Kat than she was like, you know, Danny Boatwright by like 1,000,000%.
Yeah, so you think so, Doctor? Yeah.
You know, like the embryo was going pretty strong in the fire there. And I think that was really, really like an obvious mistake. And I will absolutely correct an obvious mistake.
So you were the highest going into this season on, I believe he was your Heisenberg, which was Jason. How are you feeling about Kylo Jason now through 5 episodes? Do you feel like he is on track to deliver on that winner potential for you?
I think he's definitely going top 3. I think he might be your classic Heisenberg goat by the end if he does not ingratiate himself with those people. He's a bit too aggressive. He's a bit angry. He's a bit he's a bit of that kind of aggro Heisenberg. Mm-hmm. No, he just might pull a Russell Hantz. He might get to the end just fine. It's getting the votes. That's going to be his biggest challenge now.
But you know, we talked so much last week on the shows about Scott and Jason and you know, how it really was not cool, any of the stuff that happened with Alicia. But one of the things that we talked through on a couple of the different shows with Aris and with Steven, we said, well, let's see what happens with these guys when they're in a different situation. Like maybe this has just turned into like a really toxic situation between this, like a bad marriage. Like what happens if we get these guys, one, away from each other, and two, around different people? And we actually saw both Scott and Jason thrive this week in new situations around new people. And you didn't hear anybody talking bad about these guys.
No, I would agree with that. I think Alicia definitely was the fly in the ointment over there and rubbed them the wrong way.
Not excusing what they did, Angie.
I am not excusing what they did. And I am certainly, I do not want to be put in a position to speak for vaginas everywhere. But my issues with Jason and Scott's behavior last week was mostly survivor strategy related. And I do think, especially listening to Alicia's exit interview, I think she got a really good edit because she herself kept saying, you know, I was a real a-hole at times and they didn't show that. I was given it as hard as I got it. Do I think they treated her properly? No. But I also think that when you're out there on your last nerve, I also do not suffer fools well. And I think, I know why she was kicking the dirt because she's 90 pounds and her arms are like little sticks and she's thinking I can move more dirt with my legs than I can with my arms, but get on your butt and like get your thighs into it. If she's kicking sand in my face, I'm going to go off on her too, I think.
Look, we're 45 minutes into a grueling challenge on one of the hottest days we've ever had on Survivor. You know, I think we can, there's lots of, you can understand why anybody isn't at the top of their game, both emotionally and in terms of physically how they're performing in the challenges.
Yeah. And Alicia wouldn't have been at her best either. But, the definition of bullying itself is like to use intimidation to get someone to do what you want them to do. And really all they wanted her to do was stop talking. It's not really right. Like they weren't saying like, you better vote our way or else. Yeah. They weren't the mafia.
And I don't want to get too far down the path. I'm just saying that I thought that for these players in terms of their Survivor game, I thought this was a nice bounce back week for both of those guys. And let's see where ultimately the story goes for these two players in the game.
Especially Scott, you just left him on the board on your draft with AJ. How are you feeling about that right about now?
Not great. Well, it is. Look, that is not at the top of my do-over list for the draft I did with AJ Mass earlier this week.
It's your second, I know.
Yeah, my concern was, one, I worried about the bad behavior, from the week before. Would that resurface? I also felt like, was he going to get Cliff Robinson in terms of people saying, and we don't know how these people react. He's not with any of the other Bronze Tribe members. Did he tell those people, hey, I'm a professional NBA player? And did they care in any way, shape, or form? And we saw with Cliff Robinson, you had people like Trish and Tony who really resented the fact that Cliff Robinson was a wealthy basketball player, among other things that they felt like that he wasn't, I don't think he was working as hard and stuff like that. And he had Wu under his thumb. So I think that there was a lot of things going against Cliff that weren't necessarily going against Scott last night. So we'll see. And I also thought that he'd be a physical threat. They might say, let's vote him out before we get to the merge. But again, Angie, I am not locked in like you are on this season.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
No. I've been very pleased so far.
Hey, what fun would this show be if I was right all the time?
It would be no fun at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, other than Alicia, I would say my biggest disappointment was Darnell.
Where did you have Darnell?
I had him coming in fourth. He was my John McClane. So in a nutshell, Darnell, you screwed me over.
Yeah.
I'm not impressed. Not impressed.
And where did you have Anna?
I had Anna. Anna was supposed to go out fourth.
Yeah. Okay. So right, you had to write about where she ended up going out.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've got about a 50% accuracy rate. I mean, Caleb really messed things up. But you can't predict a medevac. That's going to screw everything up. So essentially, I'm a little bummed out because three of the people in my top five are already gone. So that's not super accurate, but the other people that have left, have left pretty much where they were supposed to. We'll see how it all shakes out.
And Debbie, you were feeling good about also, you said?
I'm loving Debbie. Yes. I'm really glad. Like there was a moment there where I thought maybe I had her in the wrong category, that maybe she was a crazy cat lady, especially after someone called her the crazy cat lady. But the tough old broad is very athletic She's very strategic. She's extremely smart. And Crazy Cat Lady never has a good handle on the strategy of the game. She never really knows what she's doing out there. So there's, I'm pretty solid with my Debbie pick. And I wouldn't be surprised if she won, to tell you the truth.
All right. Well, let's start to get into your calls. Of course, every week we get our voicemails. robinsonwebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. And why don't we start off with Andrew, who has a question about the most recently departed survivor, Anna.
Hey, Rob and Andy. This is Andrew Crick calling from Modesto, California. My question is about Anna. Is she the next Kelly Wentworth of Survivor? Kelly Wentworth obviously went out at this time in Survivor San Juan del Sur. In Survivor Second Chance, she ended up going, making a deep run, getting fourth place. So if Anna gets a second, gets another opportunity, do you guys feel like she's going to make a deep run similar to what Kelly did last season in Cambodia? Thanks, guys.
Okay. Let's take this through in two different parts, because I think that the Kelly Wentworth story is, one, the story of somebody who was the first vote off after a swap, who came back under rather unlikely circumstances. And then two, somebody who under those circumstances did remarkably well on their second chance. So let's talk that through about Anna. Do you think that she is a likely candidate to come back?
I do not. I do not. I think that I have a very different view of Anna than most of the men that I know who watch this show. I think that she's an incredibly beautiful girl with very impressive bosoms. And I think that this is distracting everybody a little bit, because I really have no idea what you guys are talking about when you say that she's got game.
You know,
I don't see it even a little bit.
This is very funny. Because I had really so many people have been said to me like, oh, she was my winner pick. She was my winner pick too. But everybody, I almost feel like, maybe I'm missing somebody, but all these people that I've talked to that are like, oh, she was my winner pick too. All guys. It seemed like that. I don't know any women that said she was the winner pick, but a lot of men made her their winner pick. And, you know, not just myself, Dalton Ross, I believe, and a number of people from the listener base also said, oh, but she was my winner pick too. And then I was also kind of thinking about this in terms of the game, though, but it's almost different, where it feels like that she had really good relationships, I feel like, with any women that she encountered, but didn't really have great relationships with the men in the game. Maybe Beast Mode Cowboy, but in terms of, you know, it didn't seem like she was on the same page as Nick. Ty really wasn't a great alliance. Peter is saying we got to get rid of her. Scott isn't, saying that she's that great. Joe doesn't seem to be enamored with her. So, Angie, what's going on here?
I think she's really great at getting along with people that she likes. But other than that, I mean, there are three parts of this game. There's the beginning, there's the swap, and then there's the post-merge. And she thought she had it all sewn up because she was in a good position in the beginning. But if you're not considering the other two parts of the game, then you're not set up at all. And you have no options when a change-up happens, which is exactly what happened. I mean, if she was a good player, she'd be playing, like, if you contrast it with the way Debbie is playing, and the way Debbie has a core alliance, but she's the only one who has made Peter feel even remotely part of that alliance, versus Anna, who's sitting there with Anna, Michelle, and Julia saying, we are a threesome. We are tight. We are unbreakable. What does she think is going to happen with those two boys when they have an option to flip? They're going to flip because they're going to realize that they're at the bottom. And you can't predict what's going to happen. So they get split up and she's totally screwed. And she doesn't have a decent social game or strategic game, because when she got thrown into a mix with a bunch of different people, Ty managed to survive. He managed to bond with Scott. He managed to start using the assets he had, thinking, how can I use idols, things like that. And she's just like, well, it's between me and Ty. It's like, no, if you're a good player, you figure out a way to flip it. She just doesn't have it. I can't see her coming back. And Kelly Wentworth was a very different kind of player. I think Kelly has some serious strategic chops, and I think Anna has a lot of cleavage.
You know, just to make that comparison between the two of them, I do feel like, though, that Anna had more airtime in her five episodes than Kelly did in her five episodes. But Kelly did go to a tribal council where she was a important cog in the Drew Christie vote, where Drew Christie was saying, hey, we got to vote her off. She's the biggest threat out there. And then, you know, Kelly worked with, you know, the other women, and they ended up getting the vote to be on Drew Christie. So Kelly, even though it was probably more under the radar, probably has the better Survivor resume in terms of what she was able to do at that first vote for Hunapu. But Anna, I almost feel like, would have a better shot than Kelly. Like, I think it was unlikely that Kelly did it, but I feel like it would be more likely for Anna than what it was for Kelly to come back, because I think that Anna was more memorable in her five episodes than Kelly was in her five episodes in San Juan del Sur.
Again, memorable in what way? Because I know everyone, you know, you guys on your were saying that she was the leader of that alliance all the time. I didn't have a sense that she was above Michelle in any way. Like I was thinking about their confessionals and the different strategic conversations that they all had.
Yeah.
And frankly, I didn't see a huge difference between the two of them. I think she's memorable because she's gorgeous. And I think if she comes back, it's because Survivor likes to have gorgeous women on it.
Jeff Probst was asked by Dalton Ross today. Dalton Ross said, Anna was my pick to win it all. So that shows you how much I know. Did I overestimate her gameplay, or was she just the victim of bad Survivor luck with the tribe swap? And Jeff Probst said to Dalton Ross, I think Anna has a lot more game in her. She's a hustler, a negotiator, great in challenges, and a person willing to throw others under the bus to save herself. What's not to like? She might be a great second chance nominee.
Yeah, I saw that coming.
Yeah.
Do you know why they lost that challenge, though?
Why? Because she couldn't do the puzzle?
Because her boob popped out.
Is that what happened?
I don't know if you noticed that halfway through the challenge, there was an enormous boob-sized blur right over her right side.
Yeah.
And Peter stopped doing the puzzle while she's still like moving around trying to do it. And then by the time it cuts back to the blue tribe winning, her top is back up and everything. So there's no blur again. So it's like, you've got to think that she had to stop, put it back. Peter's probably like, wow, that's a fabulous breast.
Angie, what did that take, a second? And he's a doctor.
Yeah.
He's seen that before.
Can't it just be
that Neil and Debbie are good at puzzles?
Well, it's definitely that, but I think that she was not helping his concentration. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
So if Probe says she's got a lot to offer the game, I believe him.
In that moment, you're saying Peter was not like a neutered dog?
No, he was not.
I feel like I'm a neutered dog right now.
No, she definitely would probably put the spring back in his step.
Yeah. All right. And so it sounds like that you're also saying that you do not think that she would fare well. So I am more bullish on her return than you are. And it also sounds like that you do not think that she would do well in a returning player season either.
Well, if I go back to my character type system, she is a siren. Sirens do extremely well on returnee seasons because people don't really value their game and they don't see them coming. So I think she would do far better the second time than she did the first time. Let me say that.
And I think that she was really the victim of some unique circumstances here where there happened to be somebody from the beauty tribe, that sort of looming number out there, where it just made all the sense in the world to take her out if another beauty tribe member was going to go out. Like hypothetically, let's say Neil drew the red buff. I think that would have potentially been a different set of circumstances. Like maybe now hypothetically, if Julia is in Neil's place on the other tribe, that still the brains may say, hey, we have to take out somebody from beauty because we need to get that number. But just the idea of, oh, somebody from beauty is going to come back and replace this person, we need to take out a number from beauty, I do think that really did work against her.
It definitely did. The beauties, you know, I really do think that Caleb's medevac was very similar to the Scoop and medevac in that it completely changed the game. Like one decision by one player completely changed the outcome of the game for everybody. And that it completely turned the tides on the beauties. And I don't think they stood a chance the second that chopper showed up, honestly. And yeah, it was a bad break for Anna, it was. But if she was a truly good player, I think she would have survived the bad break.
I'm not saying that she's the greatest player ever or the second coming of Parvati or anything like that. But I do think that she had more upside in the game than we got to see. And I do think that she ended up getting a raw deal. But we will see what happens if and when she ever gets the opportunity to return. All right. Let's take a question from Jonathan from Orlando, who wants to talk about what's gone on here in this pre-merge.
Hey, Rob and Angie. This is Jonathan from Orlando. So with Anna going home this week, could you make the argument that this is the best group of undateable survivors in an all newbie season that we've ever seen? I don't think we've seen this many people get voted out pre-merge where each of them, maybe with the exception of Alicia, was a pretty reasonable winner's pick going into the season. You can even make the case for pretty much all of them to come back for a returnee season. Love to know what you guys think. Bye.
Angie, let's talk about these undateable pre-merge Survivor players. Do you feel like, has this been one of the best crops of pre-merge players that have been voted out?
These were not my winner picks. These were everyone else's winner picks. I didn't think Liz was going to do well. I didn't think Jennifer was going to do well. I didn't think Anna was going to do well. I thought Caleb would do well. I thought Darnell would do well. So in terms of winners, I don't know. Like San Juan del Sur, all the people I thought had the most strategic chops seemed to get annihilated in that season. You know, all the people I thought that really had it going on just got pegged off one by one. So I thought that was a season
in
where
the
strong
pre-merge?
People really... Not necessarily in the pre-merge, but just as we got further deeper into the game, I remember getting less and less interested in who was remaining because they just seemed to, I don't know, to not be of the strategic caliber that I like to watch. But certainly this group of people are probably the most good looking of the first six to ever.
What a pre-merge party this might have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Think about,
if that's what it's like, you know, if that's what it looks like to be undateable, then call me undateable.
Yeah. For King Darnell, what a trip. To go wherever they went with. So what do we got? Darnell, what? Jennifer, then
Liz.
Yeah, Liz, Alicia, and now let's add in Anna.
That's quite a party. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
He's not complaining.
No, it's fine. Takes the sting off of being the first boot, I think.
It does indeed.
Yeah. So, but I do think that it speaks to maybe the strength of this cast, even maybe more so than the strength of the pre-merge, because I think that we're still saying that like good people got voted out, but I think we're still saying also that there's a lot of good people and worthy players that are still in this game. So I feel like overall, this is a very, very strong cast for a season of new people.
It is an extremely strong cast. Again, that's why, you know, I'm surprised at how much the season's been played down by CBS, you know, that it's just the most brutal. That's the most hyperbolic that Probst has gotten. And normally he's, as you know, totally over the top, like the most dramatic season ever, or, you know, the greatest winner ever. And he's not saying any of that. So I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, what's going to happen that's going to make the season suck? Why am I going to end up hating it? Because I feel like he's trying to cushion a blow.
But that's where my head is at also. But isn't it possible that, you know, after everybody got on his case after Worlds Apart, that this is the first all new player season following that? Maybe that there was a bit of course correction, and it's not necessarily that they're trying to get us ready for a season that might not be great.
I hope so. I hope so, because there had to have been a terrible backlash for him about that, about building that up so much and having it be such an awkward season.
See, but I think that the backlash happened in places where different message boards and stuff like that, and in, you know, the online community where we're the base. They've got us. I don't think they worry about a backlash until you have where we're getting into, you know, major groups of people, you know, hundreds of thousands of people on, say, the, you know, Survivor Facebook page. And, the, you know, when we start to get into when the casuals backlash, I think that's when things really start to affect what they're going to do differently.
Well, maybe he was scared because he knew that the casuals would really like Alicia. And not to say that super fans don't like her as well, but I do know, you know, like in my carpool, I have like a little 11-year-old who watches Survivor with her parents. And I asked her who she liked. And she said, I like Blondie.
Yeah, don't call her that.
I know. That's what I'm like. Oh,
yeah.
What have we learned?
Nothing.
She probably just can't remember her name, but yeah. I think maybe that perhaps Probst was a little bit, and CBS was a little bit nervous about setting up another Shireen situation and like, how is that going to shake out when they see the sweet little blonde girl getting yelled at by a couple of adult males.
Let's speak about one of these adult males that you reference, and let's take a question from Mark from New Jersey, and he has some thoughts about Kyle's game.
Hi, Rob. This is Mark from New Jersey. And I've got a question about Kyle and Nick's conversation last night. In their conversation, they were talking about aligning. Nick kept saying that he'll get Michelle and the two bronze and the two beauties can align and take out the brains. Kyle kept saying, you, me, and Sydney. And Nick would kept be like, well, and every time he would say it, Nick would be like, well, yeah, I'll go get Michelle. Do you think this is Kyle tipping his hand and Nick doesn't see it? is Kyle's plan to take out Michelle and then pick up Nick and take out the brains? And if that's the way it is, that's sort of the way he played it in the pre-swap. Is that the Kyle Jason game? To take out different people and always have yourself in the numbers. And also, preseason, Nick said that he was a great listener. Do you think that this goes directly against Nick's great listener boast? Thanks a lot, Rob. Bye.
Okay, so Angie, this is an interesting observation about Jason's game to this point. We did see this was how he ended up playing the Darnell vote, where he felt like that he could split up, say, a Darnell and Sydney and end up bringing in Sydney into the fold. Do you feel like that this is a core part of Jason's game, that he targets a pair and then he ends up assimilating the other remaining member of that pair into his alliance?
I definitely think that that's part of his strategy. I think that's a very smart way to play it, that pairs are very dangerous, and I think he wants to be everybody's second in command. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's what he was doing with Nick. But I also got a sense that he was lying his ass off with Nick, and he had no intention of ever bringing him in.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, he wants to keep all of those options open. I think he might be using Nick as his ninth person. You know, like throughout the day today, I was really running these numbers because it was such a complex episode. And I kept asking myself, did Ty make a mistake? Did Ty make a mistake? And how is this going to all pan out? And as far as I could tell, when the merge happens, it's going to be a 4-4 tie between the brains and everybody else. And whoever is sitting in that number 9 spot is going to decide everything. So if they don't get Peter out, then it's going to go towards the brains. And if they put someone like Nick in and he's being loyal to Kyle Jason or Sydney, then it's going to go their way, and then they can make it the rest of the way. So I think Kyle Jason is being very, very smart about realizing that no, like Michelle, Julia, these guys are collateral damage, and Nick is going to be collateral damage as well. Like, he's at the bottom of that group for sure.
So let me bring in this question from Humby, and then let's just talk this through a little bit more.
Angela, Robert, hey, it's Umberto here. So what should Jason and Sydney do? Especially after they go to the reward challenge and they see they voted out Anna and then Julia got into that tribe. Should they go with the brains or should they go with the beauties? I think it makes sense for them to go with the beauties, especially because now the brains are the dominant tribe. They have 5 members against Beauty 4 and Brawn 3. So it makes sense for the Brawn and the Beauty to team up. What do you guys think?
So we saw Jason have 2 different conversations in the episode last night. We had a conversation with Nick and he had a conversation with Debbie. Who did you get the sense that he was being authentic to, or do you think that he was just being equally accepting and open to their ideas and then he was going to figure it out later?
I think he said yes to everybody because that's what you do, but I think he was being authentic with Debbie and I think he was lying his ass off to Nick and placating him.
Yeah. That conversation was an interesting one because I felt like that you're right. It did seem like with Nick, he was, you know, Nick is talking to him and, you know, Jason is sort of like, oh yeah, that seems cool. And he's like, and you seem like you're a cool guy. I like you. That did not really ring true to me, that conversation he was having with Nick by the water well.
No, it didn't. But I also got the feeling that he was a little bit uncomfortable with the fact that Debbie had approached Sydney and seemed to have so much respect for Sydney. And it wasn't so much of him saying, how dare you? I'm the leader of this group or this alliance of this pair with Sydney. It was more like, do I need to worry about those two turning on me? I think he picked up on that possibility immediately.
So I'm interested to see where this ultimately ends up going, because we didn't see Jason with Michelle and we didn't see Jason with Neil really. And I wonder how he's going to get along with those guys. I mean, do you see Jason and Neil being on good terms? And do you see Jason and Michelle potentially working together?
No, I don't see that at all. I think the brains really only have 4. I think that, you know, the episode opened with Neil explaining that they have an alliance of 4 and a cancer whose name is Peter. And I don't think that problem's going away. I think Peter is going to be a significant factor in how this game plays out. I don't know if the brains can really count on him, but without him, they only have 4 people. So it means if they don't count on Jason and Sydney joining them, then they really are outnumbered. I think it's smart for them all to work together as a solid group and get out the rest of those beauties. And then when the merge happens, I really do see that that Kyle, Jason, Sydney, Scott, and Ty are going to be 1-4, like a group of four, and then Debbie, Joe, Neil, and Aubrey are going to be the other four.
But do you think that's the best way to go, to sort of just like completely target and annihilate one group? Isn't it better to sort of, I mean, if this is a Game of Thrones and you're like a Littlefinger, don't you want to keep both sides warring the entire time? So isn't it best to maybe then after a beauty person goes out, then go after a brain person and sort of like keep that focus on brains versus beauty so that Braun can sit in the middle and sort of be untargeted?
Well, I mean, if they've got Ty, then they don't have all that on them. And they're still going to feel like they have the numbers because they're going to have four against the three Braun. So it's not like the brains are ever going to feel like Braun is getting away from them and that they need to start targeting them. That's why I'm saying that ninth person is crucial, and they have to see that coming. Whoever is in that position, if it gets down to that 4-4 split, is going to be like, you need to have that person solid. So you like if the yellow tribe right now gets out Peter, then the beauties and the bronze have it to the end. But if they don't, if they allow Julia to be eliminated next, then they're in really big trouble.
So you feel like that Braun needs to continue to target beauty to get down to the point where they could potentially get Peter to be the swing vote in some sort of, you know, Braun plus Ty versus what's left of brains and bring Peter in.
Well, what I'm saying is when you get that core eight together that seem to have a really solid alliance with each other, and you look at just the freelancers now are Nick, Peter, Michelle, and Julia. So who are they going to align with? The only one who might align with brains is Peter. Nick is a bit of a question mark because I don't think he's really aligned with anybody solidly. Ty, I think Ty and Scott are like, I'm shipping Sky. Mm-hmm. They're definitely a pair. They're a pair now, and yeah, they're going to go as far as they can. And Scott is going to protect Ty when that merge happens, and he's not going to let Kyle and Sydney hurt him.
But to me, I just feel like that at that point, like, okay, maybe you might say that, okay, either Nick or Michelle might go home. But at that point, if they merge after that next episode, wouldn't it make all the sense in the world for the Braun to swallow up Michelle and Julia, those remaining beauties, and then keep them and then have the numbers on the brains going into the merge?
It would make sense from a numbers perspective, but I think from a relationship perspective, I mean, those girls are really tight. They're not going to turn on each other. And it seems like this is the problem with freelancers, is they have no loyalty. Mm-hmm. Like that's why Peter and Nick are so dangerous, because you really don't know where they're going to end up. Like Ty is a man of no people. He's going to latch onto Scott and not let go because his ride or die was Caleb and who went home. So if I can just add that I think it's also highly unlikely that both Michelle and Julia are going to be on the same tribe together at any point, because right now they're going to be split between the two, and whoever the next vote is, I believe it's going to be one of them from either side, like depending whether it's blue or yellow who loses. I think that's the next person gone. So in terms of, you know, using those beauties as numbers to back up either the brains or the brawn, there's only going to be Nick and either Michelle or Julia. Mm-hmm. And it's consistently, like what every player seems to have said is that there are two people that they don't trust or like, and it's Peter and Nick. And I just can't see anyone relying on either of those as a number. And I think they're going to want to target those guys. And then whoever the straggler is, Michelle, Julia, maybe they have a shot of hitching their wagon on somebody's numbers. Maybe they don't.
See, I think that only one more person is going to go out before the merge, because we're already, you know, we're 13 down to 12. I feel like we'll merge at 11. I think that whoever goes home this week, even if it's Michelle or Nick or Julia, like I feel like if it's that scenario where Nick goes home, then maybe they say that, okay, we can't have this pair here. And maybe they target one, so, sort of like the witches last season. But I just don't think they would finish the job. I don't feel like that the other, whatever, 10 players are going to say, hey, now we have to target Julia this week. Like, it just seems like that they're going to be have blinders on to target that other big superpower. And I can't see those two forces coming together and saying, you know what, let's just vote out Julia this week and then we'll face off against each other next vote.
I don't think they see it themselves as completely warring factions, though. Like, I think Debbie thinks she's got a real solid thing with Kyle and Sydney, and Scott's got a real solid thing going on with Ty. So I think there's a number of different machinations that this puzzle could come together, and I don't think they need the beauties.
Yeah, well, puzzles do lay down for Debbie like lovers.
They do. Fishy yeah. lovers.
So we'll see. All right, so a lot of intrigue to come up these next couple of weeks, no matter who goes home on this next one, which member of the beauty tribe. All right, let's take another voicemail and let's talk about what's going to happen here with whether or not players will switch from their original tribe. This is John from Austin, Texas.
Hey, Rob and Angie. This is John from Austin, Texas. One of the things that fascinates me the most about Survivor is just how hard it is to convince someone in the majority to flip, even when it appears to be a really obvious game situation for them to do so. It seems to me that flipping in an all-newbie season is generally based more on strength of personal relationships with your tribe versus a returning player season where game theory and acting on imperfect information seem to prevail. Rob, can you get super strategy nerdy and break this problem down both from the perspective of Anna in this episode, as well as other hypothetical or past game situations where a person needs to break a majority or plurality to survive? Love you, babe.
Okay. Angie, do you think this is a thing that we can officially say that players from new player seasons are much less likely to break ranks with their original tribe than players on returning seasons?
I would agree. We can't all be a Sestrinino.
Yeah. So why do you think that is? Is it just as simple as those are the only people that they know and that the returning player is more savvy and may have other pre-existing relationships with the players from the opposite tribe?
I definitely think that's it, that they may know each other outside of the game. They also realize that alliances can be fluid, that the game is constantly changing. Like even just watching Scott's behavior, like the advice he gave to Ty last night about whether or not to calm down, don't use the idol. It's not you going home. Just Scott having been to tribal a few times and Ty never having gone has completely changed his outlook on the game and his ability to manage some of these kind of stressful situations. So returning players have a lot more experience. They understand that that alliances switch, that your original plan never ends up being the final plan. And, you know, anyone but me, let's just kind of keep switching it around to get the best possible scenario every single week.
Do you feel like that this is something that's happening right now? Because I feel like that we saw on both tribes, people seem willing to work with people from the other side, maybe not necessarily to betray the people from their own side. But I don't think that maybe you could argue maybe in the case of Peter, maybe he should have been more open to switching things around. But do you think that this is a problem with these new players?
I think it's a problem with some of them and not others. And I think this is a really great barometer for us to be able to tell who are the really strong Survivor players in this cast and who are not. Because you'll notice the people that are very open to working with others right now and are really making as many inroads as possible are Debbie, Kyle, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Ty's doing it, but he's doing it out of like desperation to survive. I think if he were in with a solid beauty tribe, he would not be doing that. I think Aubrey made an attempt to try and make a connection there with Anna, but when she met resistance from her alliance, she felt the need to back down on that rather than really being able to run that whole play right to the end zone.
Okay.
I can't believe I just made a sports reference like that.
Look at you. Next, you'll be doing your March Madness character type bracket.
I will not.
This is the secretly good Ivy League school, this character type. Okay. Let's take another question, and let's talk about two players that you do not seem to be particularly fond of. But let's talk about Nick and Peter, Sam and Toronto.
Hey, Robin, Angie. This is Sam from Toronto. There's been a lot of talk about Jason, Ty, Debbie, and even Sydney winning the game, but here's my question. Does blogger Nick have a shot? Or does my fave Dr. Peter have a shot of winning Survivor Go Wrong? Thanks for taking my question.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, Sam from Toronto. I think they have fabulous potential. I don't think there's any hope in hell of either of those gentlemen winning Survivor.
I feel like that we've had more players be negative about Peter. Do you think it's officially done for Nick in terms of winning the game. I feel like edit wise, but I don't know necessarily, like I didn't hear one other player say a negative thing about Nick. Steven made the point that he thought that he came across as douchey and arrogant, but I didn't hear one other player say a negative word about him last night.
I know in the exit interview, Anna was saying that she never liked him, and maybe that's a little bit revisionist of her. I did get the feeling that the girls were a little bit uneasy about him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the edit is not good. Like, I've been calling him Purple Nick all season. So I just don't see him.
That's not really fair. I mean, he has not been one of the airtime leaders, but everybody from the Beauty Tribe other than Caleb last week was invisible, and he got a decent amount of airtime last night.
He did. What does that mean?
I don't know. I mean, it could be his boot next week.
That's what I'm wondering. That's mm-hmm. what I'm wondering. I don't know. I don't know what they're getting him set up for. But yeah, I mean, my first thought when he was getting a confessional is, Nick's getting a confessional.
We'll see ultimately where it goes with him. I think that the major point that you and I seem to disagree about is that I think that it might be smarter for the Braun tribe people to pick up the beauty people. And maybe there is some sort of a future. I think that probably if that group goes to tribal council, I do think that it would be likely for either Nick or Michelle to go home. But I think that hypothetically, if it is Michelle, for whatever reason, if Jason feels like he has a better connection with Nick, that I think that there could be room for Nick to maneuver post merge.
Well, I do know that those brains need to replace Peter. And if they feel like they've got a good connection with Nick or Michelle or whoever's left from the beauties, it's possible that they might try and slot those guys in. I get the feeling that people that have good intuition tend to be the ones that are giving Nick back what he's giving them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I mean. When Kyle's reaction to him was like, oh yeah, sure, buddy, you and me all the way. And it was like, he was not being genuine, but neither was Nick. Like, people see through a lot, people that are good at reading people, see that Nick's responses and expressions to them are very kind of surfacey, very smarmy. There's really nothing. There's no depth to that. It's very easy to see that. Like, I'm not getting a good feel off of Nick at all. I can't believe that anyone would believe anything that comes out of his mouth.
And on that note, I think it's going to be very interesting coming into next week, where you say that the people who are really smart are giving Nick back what he's giving them, that we see that it looks like Debbie is starting to flirt with Nick next week. And I wonder if that's a signal. Could Debbie be open to the idea of working with Nick? Or do you feel like that is more of a point against Nick, that you feel like that maybe Debbie has Nick figured out?
I think Debbie has everyone figured out. I really hope she doesn't flirt with him. I hope it's not like a Trish LJ situation, because that was just very uncomfortable to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that it's misdirection on the part of like CBS to throw that at us. It's just, I think they want to make it look like, no, they're not just going to be knocking off the beauties one by one. Look, Nick's making inroads. I don't know how real that is. I think Debbie's just having fun because she thinks he's pretty.
That would be some sort of a showmance too, right?
It would. That would be some kind of showmance.
I mean, I don't think we've ever seen a situation like that before on Survivor. Nebby, are you shipping that?
Well, it's better that than the other way around. That's for sure. But that's just not attractive on any level.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, Trish gave it her all. I mean, she tried. LJ just wasn't feeling it, I guess.
Yeah. All right, let's take a question from Jean from Ontario. Again, we have so many great Canadian callers on the voicemail show, and it's not just all for you, Angie. This is every week.
It isn't. I know, represent.
Yes. All right, let's take a question from Jean from Ontario, and wants to talk about Scott Pollard.
Hi, Rob and Angie. It's Jean from Ontario, Canada. I'm impressed with Scott Pollard this week, and I really like his position in the game with both tribes going forward. It's a little early to say, but is Scott Pollard the best tall player to ever play Survivor? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Okay, Angie, I'd like to make a chart, and maybe we can get some of our crack researchers on Robin's podcast to work on this. I would like to somehow chart gameplay acumen and height. Would Scott be the furthest out on that 45 degree angle going up on the chart?
You mean in terms of like how well he's doing or how tall he is? Because I think he wins on both charts.
Well, I think that on the bottom of the chart, on the y-axis is going to be height. And on the x-axis, I would like to chart how good players are at the game. Would Scott Pollard be the furthest person out on that line?
He would. I believe he would. I'm trying to think of all...
Further than Jason. Kyle Jason.
Because it's about gameplay, right? Like, I don't even care how far into the game Scott goes. I want to see how well he does. And I got to tell you, I am, at this moment, I'm completely blown away by Scott. That was the last thing I was expecting out of him. Like, he got game. He really has been able to manipulate people and get people on his side and play down the fact that he is gigantic. Why in the world is he not the first person being targeted on every single one of these tribes?
But hold on a second. Let me just play devil's advocate for a second, because I don't think anybody was saying this about Scott coming into this episode. Are you just that impressed with what he was able to do in episode 5? And also, asterisk, I did lobby that he should have won the fishy last night.
I know. I was completely shocked that he didn't win the fishy last night. I thought that was a travesty. I honestly did.
Travesty.
A travesty. It was shocking. It was shocking. I wanted to hit Steven with a fish. I didn't know what he was thinking.
Yeah.
I think he was a little bit overshadowed by some of the other players on the original Braun tribe. I think that they gave Kyle a lot of the screen time, but I think Scott had potentially a lot going on in terms of like building relationships both with Kyle and with Sydney and with Jennifer too before she lost her mind. No, it's true. So no, I wasn't expecting that from Scott, and it was just from that episode. But I don't think it came out of nowhere. It wasn't like they completely did a 180, and you know, it was impossible to believe that this was the same guy. You could see germs of it. You could see the beginning seedlings of this kind of player. I just didn't expect him to know the game as well as he seems to, you know, like he seems to have, you know, Debbie's like this too. They seem to have a very natural, intuitive read on how to do this. Even just realizing that, wait, I'm the only person who knows where two of these idols are, and I'm going to convince Ty not to use it. And he didn't even mention why. You know, like he simply just spoke to him on like he recognized that Ty was just nervous and he just needed to know, don't waste it. Keep it for yourself. It wasn't like, wait, I can use this with you. We can be a team. Like there was none of that. It was incredibly smart.
I agree. I think that he might be really, really good. I think I need to see how this all plays out, that, you know, maybe I am more results oriented than you are. And I've certainly heard that criticism of myself, but I think I want to see the rest of the season before I'm ready to crown Scott as the best, tallest player ever.
Let's put it this way. I think he definitely has more game chops than Anna.
Because
I know people are they have no problem saying Anna has so much more game in her and she really had potential. Based on what I've seen so far of Scott, I think he's got, you know, he's like three Annas in one.
That's an interesting proposition. I don't know if I would be quite prepared to say, is Anna the best buxom player of all time? I'm not sure if I would necessarily, but I think that she might. Yeah, this is tough. This is don't chart this, anybody. We don't need this chart done, but I feel like that might be interesting to see if you were going to chart that out.
We don't need a boob rating. That's
not what I'm asking for, Angie. Do not put words in my mouth.
That's what I heard. I'm sorry.
I'm just saying, like, I'd like to see with Scott. I think that is a possible outcome of his game. Let's see where it goes, but I'm not ready to crown him yet the best, tallest player.
Well, the thing is, like, what are the triple threat is like the physical strength, which he's absolutely got, the social ability, which I didn't think he had, but now I'm realizing that I think he really does. And strategically, he seems to have a handle on the game. And I really thought he was going to come in and be the caveman. I really did.
Yeah.
He's surprising me.
Let's see. I think the book is not yet written. And I think that's what my position has been on him throughout the game, is that the book has not yet been closed on this person on the show.
I think he's got a better chance than Peter or Nick. Let's put it that way.
I think that's fair to say. I mean, just positionally, I think that he is in a much better spot than they are. And we'll see ultimately how he is as a player. I think that we've seen the high highs and low lows. Which one is true?
What I'm very curious to see him pull off is how in the world is he going to try and marry those two idols together for his own benefit? That is going to be a major coup.
That is a great segue into our next question, which is from Hunter, wants to ask about the super idol.
Hi, Rob. This is Hunter from California. I wanted to talk about the super idol. My question is sharing that super idol between two players really better than each player having the regular idol for themselves? Also, if there's a vote split between the two people sharing the idol, in which whatever player that does not play the idol will go home, who gets to decide who gets to use the super idol? Thanks, Rob. Peek-a-boo.
Well, I believe that there's no real question there with that super idol. That would actually be a best case scenario where there's a vote split between two players who, you know, whoever ultimately goes home, then on the revote, whoever gets voted out, it would just be, okay, I'll use the super idol, unless the other person's like, I choose not to use my half of the super idol. If those two people that are having the votes split against them each possess half of the idol and decide beforehand of, hey, let's use the super idol, don't you think that would be a pretty easy decision?
Yes, I think that would be a pretty easy decision. And it's funny that you should say that move, because I've been trying to think all day long. I've been racking my brains thinking, how in the world does Ty get to top three? Because I think he's kind of screwed no matter what he did last night. And what I'm thinking is, if he uses that idol as insurance, as a security blanket to get in with Scott and with Kyle, and then manages to get it to a point where it comes down to like, okay, well, the three of us have a partnership, so whenever all the votes fall on one of us, we're going to put the super idol after the votes and use it. And then somehow strategically get all the votes to go on either Kyle or Scott, and then not use the idol so that that person gets out. And then he gets one step further within that, because otherwise he's at the bottom of that Braun Alliance, just like he was at the bottom of the Beauty Alliance. But in order to be able to pull off that move, I mean, that's Angie fan fiction right there for sure.
Yeah. There's no way anybody, barring an immunity run, should ever bring Ty to the final three. I mean, that would be suicide, right?
I do think that would be suicide, but I'm not sure if they know it would be suicide. Like, if Scott's looking at, like, I need to choose between Kyle and Ty, you know, when you've played a very similar game to your best buddy, sometimes it makes more sense to go with someone radically different.
Mm-hmm.
Or he may not even realize the kind of moves that Ty had, or the kind of bonds that he had. And maybe with the jury, Ty doesn't have an in with them. It depends.
Ty has an in with every living being. That's why he loves all life, because everybody is so nice to him. Everybody loves him.
He'll go to the end and he'll cry, and everyone will give him the money. Yeah.
How could anybody not vote for Ty? Right.
Scott has a better chance against Kyle than he does against Ty.
Yeah, I would think so.
And it would be like a Kim Chelsea situation. Like, I'm gonna bring my peeps, and I'm just gonna trust that I played a better game.
Mm-hmm. So, is having the super idol, or is sharing the super idol, better than having your own idol for Scott? So what, like, if Scott is somebody who's allies with the two people that have idols, is he sort of uniquely protected in that he could say, if he gets blindsided, hey, bros, quick, each give me your idol, save me?
As I said, I mean, that's the move, but actually getting enough loyalty from the two idol owners to do that for you, I really don't know how he's going to pull that off.
Because don't you think, Angie, isn't the peer pressure there really intense, where Scott just got blindsided and he's like, guys, I know you both have an idol. Quick, both of you guys give me your idol. And Jason's like, here you go, bro. And then for Ty, I mean, isn't he incredibly peer pressure? Is he really going to be like in that spot? Like, sorry, no can do, Scott. I'm just going to hold on to this myself. Sorry. Really appreciate that. Especially if he's going to the jury.
Yeah, but that's going to be like the one jury vote he doesn't get.
And he's
outed
as having the idol in front of everybody. Like, I kind of feel like So much pressure.
It's going to be awkward.
Yeah.
It's going to be awkward. But first of all, let's be clear. Kyle Jason is not giving up that idol for anybody but Kyle Jason. I don't think that's going to happen ever. And it's the threat, because this is like the Yule idol, right? This is it's the threat of the super idol that gets him into Final Three. It's not actually using it.
Mm.
It's when everybody else realizes there are three people that are protected by the super idol and we can't flush it because it doesn't come out till after the votes. Like, and which one of us is going to go home?
Yeah.
That's brutal. Like, kudos to whoever, and it's probably going to be Debbie, who figures out the strategy to flush the idol and send someone home who they don't like on their side. Like, okay, we'll push Peter forward and he'll be the one who goes home when they play the super idol.
Yeah.
That's going to be, it's going to be nuts if it happens.
It'll be very fun. Really fun moment. So let's take another voicemail. This is from Jordan, has a question about the swing votes.
Hey Rob, this is Jordan from Los Angeles. My question for you and Angie this week has to do with the intentional Matt Singh strategy. Both you and Steven talked about how the original Braun Tribe members are going to be in a great position in the game moving forward during the live know-it-alls. I think that more specifically, Steven said that the perceived weakness of the tribe being down in the numbers is going to be a huge asset at this stage of the game. Would it actually ever make sense, though, to start counteracting the intentional Matt Singh by voting out the swing votes early on? I think strategically it made sense to vote out Anna during this round. Sorry for your winner pick, Rob. But with Julia taking her place, does it actually begin to make sense for the brains to try and blindside Scott and maybe like a 3-2-1 split? That way the beauties are going to be continuing to dwindle and there's less of a chance that information is going to get back to Jason and Sydney moving forward. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Okay, Angie, should we get to the point where the optimal survivor strategy should be coming into these scenarios? Should the other tribes be targeting those swing votes, hypothetically targeting the Braun tribe instead of both tribes trying to work with them and brains and beauty?
I agree with that. I actually hate the fact that it's always the swinging floater types that end up being, you know, everyone's scrambling for their favor instead of realizing that we kept ourselves strong. We're in the majority. Let's work together, get out these, get rid of these swing voters, and then we'll duke it out from there. I definitely think that's a better strategy than having to scramble around and pick up all these freelancers. Mostly because they're not reliable. You know, this is why I like the idea of the brains and the Braun kind of banding together and getting rid of, cause I think the beauties are now those floaters and those freelancers rather than the Braun. Because they were not a solid unit to begin with. Like Ty is a free agent, Nick is a free agent, and then the girls are getting pegged off one by one. So they're, you know, they're going to be coming into the merge 1-2 at best.
Mm-hmm.
So I almost think it's better not to rely on them, because they could flip back and forth like crazy. They've got no loyalty to anyone.
But I think this is such an interesting time to have this exact conversation, because this is a season which was filmed before Survivor Second Chance that's airing after Survivor Second Chance. And I think that coming into the merge in Survivor Second Chance, I think that this is how people started talking. And I think that this was around the time that people started talking about voting blocks and, hey, we're coming into the merge and this is such an unusual merge. We're going to target the witches here. Cass needs to be the first person to go home, because we got to take out these swing votes, and then let's just keep our bigger alliance strong and let's not let the, you know, Sierras and Abby Marias and Kelly Wentworths, let's target all of them. But then what happened? People like Steven started to say, like, hey, here are these votes, these stragglers. I should take these people. And you started to have people jockeying around for the swing votes. So it makes a lot of sense to say, yeah, target the swing votes. But inevitably in these games, people are going to get greedy and say, oh, well, why am I targeting those people? I could be using them to my advantage to get rid of the bigger threats right now. So we can talk until we're blue in the face, but people are always going to say, let me pick up these people who don't have anything else going on and use them to my advantage. I believe somebody once called them the bottom feeders.
The bottom feeders, that's right. But does that work? Like, did that work out for Steven?
No, but it's extremely tempting, and people are always going to give into that.
It's extremely tempting, but it's also... It's tempting for someone like a Debbie to work with a bigger group, but be working on a sub-alliance within that. So going, and this is how she would pull it off potentially, is making an alliance with Kyle and Sydney while still having her alliance with her brains. But saying once we're down to eight, what we're going to do is then it's like, Sydney, it's you, me, and Aubrey. Mm-hmm. So once you, and you have all these different relationships forming within this bigger group, and then it's still very, very exciting. And it's still a lot of, there's still a lot of numbers that can be shifted around and used to their advantage. It's not like you're like, well, great. Now we've got, we've lost all the loose cannons, all the stragglers, and we've got no more chips to balance things one way or the other. It's never like that. You can always shift things around.
Let me give you a question from Ian, who wants to ask a question that I would love to get your answer to about the Women's Alliance.
Hey, Rob. Hey, Angie. This is Ian Rice calling. I had a question for you about girl power. Angie, you're a girl. This week we heard
woman
tell Sydney that she wants to make sure a woman wins. So here's my question. We hear this frequently from Survivor women. They want to make sure a woman wins. We don't really hear the same statement being made from men. What is it? Is this girl power real, or is this just a strategy that women use against each other to earn their trust and gain an alliance? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Okay, Angie, speak for all women. this is not just a Survivor thing that happens. This is a common reality TV trope on these strategic reality shows of, hey, let's do the all women thing. Let's go, you know, do the Women's Alliance. You know, we heard Debbie last night. I really want to see a woman win this game. Is this something that women think about or actually care about in terms of, or is it just something that they're doing to curry favor, or sort of it's the kind of thing where, okay, I'm going to just tell people that, or is it sort of a very subtle form of manipulation where if you have a woman and you tell her, okay, we're going to do the women thing, or we're going to do all women alliance, and because I really want a woman to win this game, it could a woman player or female player actually feel sort of a pressure in terms of what's going to happen when people watch the show and I look like that I was somebody who wasn't willing to do the all women thing.
Okay. That was a lot of different scenarios, but speaking for all women everywhere in the entire world.
Yes.
Yep. It's very real. And it's something that we think about all the time, or at least I do. And I think we touched on this a little bit in our Tribe Division podcast. When Survivor splits tribes on gender lines, there's a very common theme where the boys are talking about how this is going to be easy and it'll be embarrassing if they don't win. And the girls are saying, we have to win. This is going to be so embarrassing if we don't win, mm-hmm. you know, because we're representing women everywhere. And these guys are so arrogant and they think that this is going to be so easy. So there is a sense already in a lot of reality shows, especially in reality shows like Survivor or anything that has a physical quality to it, that the women are already coming in as the underdog. The women are already less likely to win. The men already think they have this in the bag. So yeah, there's that sense of solidarity of if we're going to win, we have to work together because we don't have the physical advantage. We have a lot of other advantages, but not necessarily that one. So if at least we have a unified front and we never, you know, we try and look out for each other, even if we're on opposite tribes, then at least we have a better ability to get through this. And I think Debbie's very aware that the girls' numbers are really dwindling. Like the chances of them, there being a girl alliance at this point are next to nil. There's hardly any of them left. So yeah, she's trying to appeal to Sydney's femininity. She's trying to get a sense of like, okay, common bonds. We can bond because we're both women. We're both into fitness. We're both intelligent. She's really trying to bond with Sydney on any level she can. What she doesn't know about Sydney is Sydney doesn't like girls. So it made me a little bit like, don't say that. Don't say that. I was very happy to hear Sydney say that. Oh, she, you know, maybe I could use a mother figure out here. Because normally she's like, I want to work with boys. Girls get on my nerves. Mm-hmm. But no, I think that's women, you know, girl power definitely is a thing, certainly in male dominated situations. So yeah, if you're in some sort of environment, whether it's a business environment or a sports environment where the guys think that they're, you know, they're even being condescending to you. They're going easy on you. Yeah, the girls are going to band together and they're going to do their best to kick your ass. That's a real thing.
And if you were a player that was out there on Survivor and you couldn't win, would it be more important to you that, say, another woman won more so than somebody else who was either a man that was in your alliance or somebody that was from your original tribe? Is that something that you feel like a lot of women players think about?
I think a lot of them do think about it. I think it depends on how those men behaved. So if you had someone like Ty in your alliance who sacrificed everything he could to keep you alive, you're not gonna begrudge him the win. Mm-hmm. But if you've got someone like a Russell Hance who called you part of his, you know, dumbass girl alliance, and you found out that that's how you were being spoken about, like, yeah, hell mm-hmm. yeah, you'd want a girl to win that season for sure.
All right. And again, this is a very interesting topic, as any of these sociological things are when we get into them. And, you know, we can only just ask the questions. We don't have all the answers.
No, to think that you have all the questions, that's just wackadoo.
We don't even have all the questions?
No, we don't have the questions. We don't have the answers. We know nothing, Rob.
Oh, we had the questions, know-nothings. At least. Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's take a question from our buddy Syrup Guy. We do have a question from him.
What's up, Rob and Angie? Syrup Guy calling from the Great White North. My question is for you, Rob, and it is, if you're able to have a mulligan with your winner pick, and we know you're not, and we know that you're going to live with Nicole Bragging, even if Debbie doesn't win, that she beats you again, and she's the knowingest Sesternino of them all. But if you were able to have a mulligan and were able to repick right now, who would be your winner pick? Thanks.
Boy, Syrup Guy really pouring it on. I guess that's what he does, though. He's Syrup Guy.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I can't. So Debbie's out of the mix, I would presume, because I can't have the same winner pick. Let me go a little bit off the board. Who do you think my new winner pick will be?
That's going to get in trouble because you go off the board. I think you're picking Neil.
You think I'm picking Neil?
Yeah.
I think that you are close, but I'm going to say Aubrey.
Whoa.
Yeah. How about
really?
That?
Really?
How about that?
How about that, Syrup Guy?
Yeah. How about that? I think that Aubrey is positioned very, very well here. I think that she has a lot of friends over on that Brains tribe, and I think that she is somebody who will neither be a target post-merge, and I think that she's somebody who could really hold up her end of the bargain in these competitions. She's got a idol in a close ally in Neil, who knows how this is ultimately going to play out, and I feel like, why not? I got to go Aubrey as my new winner pick. Again, I talked about with Sophie about how I didn't see the eye of the tiger yet, the eye of the tiger bathing suit yet either, but mm-hmm. I would say that who knows? It's early. Maybe she finds it. Aubrey.
You make risky picks.
Yes.
Risky picks.
Risky picks.
Yeah, she's a bit too much. She's a bit of a beta. That's my problem with Aubrey. She backs down very easily. She tends to, I don't think she's going to have enough of a resume. She may get to the end, but I think she's letting other people make a lot of decisions for her. And she's just kind of, she's part of it. But do you really see her taking control of her game enough to really put herself in a winner position?
I haven't seen it yet, but again, I'm trying to minimize risk here of the people that I think of, like, who do I think will be targets at other points in the game? And I think that she has that going for her, where I don't see anybody coming for her before the final five. And I think that she's somebody who everybody does seem to like. You put her into the final three, what happens? Who knows? And I think that she's somebody that we are underreporting what a physical threat she is in the challenges. So I like all of those factors. I try to take a look at who is somebody who I think is smart, who is somebody who I think is not a risk to be voted out anytime soon, and who's somebody who, you know, if it comes down to it, even if they say she's not in the alliance, but I think that maybe she could, you know, win an endurance challenge down the stretch. Who knows? I'll say Aubrey. Okay.
So you're saying she's essentially Sabrina in what you just described.
But who's
there?
Kim? Yeah. Where's Kim Spradlin?
Kim Spradlin's Debbie.
Debbie is Kim Spradlin?
Debbie is Kim Spradlin. Less charming, perhaps, but certainly thinking things through and making all the right connections. She's got the most options open to her of anyone on that Brains tribe. She's working it. She sees five moves ahead. I'm really impressed with Debbie's game.
All right. Is Debbie Coach or is Debbie Kim Spradlin? I will go directly to the source next week when Kim Spradlin is the guest on the Survivor Recap. How about that?
Wow. That is amazing.
Yeah. And on top of that,
I love Kim.
Voicemails with Jason Somerville. So a really great show next week coming up
nice.
As well. Nice. Very exciting.
That's really nice. Maybe he can talk about Anna and how powerful she is in her strategy and her game theory.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know if he knows too much about her, but I'm sure that will certainly come up next week on the voicemails with Jason Somerville, a poker player extraordinaire and all around great guy. Okay, let's do one last question here on the voicemails.
Rod, how many pull-ups can you do?
Okay. Well, Angie, Debbie can do a lot of pull-ups. Debbie can do a lot of pull-ups.
She can.
Boy, you know what? I have not touched any exercise equipment, and it's going on at least 5 or 6 months here, really. Since even before Anthony was born, I will tell you, though, I did dig out the pull-up bar, not just a branch from my garage. I did at least bring it upstairs, and I did one today.
You did one?
One.
Wow. That is amazing.
Yeah.
Did you try and do more than one, or are you just proving to yourself you can do one, and that's
enough? I did one, and then I took a break, and then I was able to do one again, but we'll see.
Did you go for the second one, but did you like the shaky thing?
I didn't force it. I didn't push the issue too far, but I said, okay, let me get back. Let me start to begin the long process back of just being a complete disaster.
Did you periscope it?
I did not. It would have been a short periscope, Angie.
It would have, but yes. You would have had words of encouragement, which
I would have, but I wouldn't have been able to read and hold the phone.
No, because you're too busy shaking.
Yeah, too busy. You know, Debbie has been so great every single week on the show, and I've been pulling some of her quotes every single week. This was my favorite Debbie quote of the week.
I already went to Jason. We have a foursome. Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching. We got a cyanide triple bond carbon nitrogen. You're not breaking it between us.
What is that? So what is that formula, Angie?
I don't understand. It's like the Charlie Brown teacher
cyanide,
to me.
Triple bond, carbon, nitrogen. You're not breaking it between us.
Cyanide, carbon, triple nitrogen.
A cyanide, triple bond, carbon, nitrogen. You're not breaking it between us.
Well, what is that the formula for?
Triple bond. I have no idea, Rob. She's speaking chemistry mumbo jumbo to me. It could be anything. That could be the hydrogen bomb for all I know. I have no idea what that is.
My favorite part of it, I think, though, was the
ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
She needs a bell out there.
Yeah.
For sure.
Now, she is her own bell. So I do love I do love that. It's a great job, Debbie.
Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
And that is what Angie's going to be saying if Debbie is the one. Although, you got to pick one. So Jason is still your winner? I feel like you're calling both of them now.
I'm sticking, like, I try not to change midstream because I think that's a bit shady, but I'm preferring Debbie to Kyle for sure. But I think Kyle still got a shot, and I think they're both going pretty deep into the game. So I'm going to leave it at Kyle, but I would prefer if Debbie wins.
Yes. That would be your new
winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Yeah. And that was from last night. That is a new clip. We're going to retire the old one. The old winner, winner, mm-hmm. chicken dinner, and that we have replaced it.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
So there you go.
I thought that was one of the beauties. Wasn't that Anna who said that?
Is it? Okay, we'll go back. But that's the new one. We're going to retire the old one. We're retiring the old one. Yes.
Ty is not going to be excited about killing and eating a chicken, so I find it hard to believe.
All right, then in honor of my old winner, winner, chicken dinner, that will be the new. We'll replace that on the soundboard and retire the old one. Okay, put the old one out the pasture. Okay. Are you ready to get into some of these Survivor social media from this week?
Am I ever? Oh, boy.
All right, let's get into our Survivor social media.
Tweets, baby, tweets. Survivor tweets. They're better than using your idol to blindside Dr. Pete. Tweets.
Yeah. Some would argue with that. All right, that was the great Ryan Elder. You can follow Ryan Elder on Twitter. He's at Ryan Elder Music. So let's get into the Survivor tweets. Angie, let's start with Ty Trang, who tweeted, "You guys are killing me. I am in the West Coast. I can't see anything. know something, but I don't know anything. Hey, sweet at Anna Kate. So what is with the survivors this season? Of don't spoil it for me. Don't ruin it for me.
I don't know what they thought was going to happen.
Yeah, you were there. You know,
that's the stupidest thing I think I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they were there. I think they just don't know how they're going to be portrayed. I think they're sitting there. I think it's probably a big nail biter for them. Like, am I going to look like an idiot? Is there all kinds of things going on that I didn't know about?
Right.
And then I imagine he got inundated with like messages from people and he's like, I don't even know what you saw. I can't possibly respond.
But just for the record, we can't spoil the season for the people on the season.
That is true. That is true. And for the record, figure out a way to watch a live stream coming from the East Coast. Like, it's get over it. It's not on us.
Right. Like, the survivors don't need to go into Twitter blackout from us. For us, maybe. Not from it's us.
Like, no, yeah, don't tell me. Don't speculate top five. La, 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 la. I don't want to know.
Let's take some more tweets. Steven really does a great job live tweeting the show. And if he's just writing material for the know-it-alls.
He's very clever.
He called out Michelle, who said, I don't think anybody expected the switch today. And he said, literally everybody should have expected the switch today. That's a fair point.
That's absolutely fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
Okay. Eliza. She's always fired
Eliza,
up.
Eliza, the firecracker.
Firecracker. She said, Peter, the narcissist, is going to think this tribe swap is just for him. So obviously, Eliza was listening to the AJ Mass podcast earlier this week.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. She also tweeted about, no, Anna, don't throw Ty under the bus. And don't yell in your confessionals. This isn't Big Brother. Is Anna yelling in her confessionals, Angie?
I think that's just her voice, Eliza, because I saw her day after interview and it was very piercing.
Here's Anna's confessional. You tell me if she's yelling.
When Jeff says drop your buffs, I'm thinking, holy crap, what are you going to do with us? There's 13 people. It's uneven. You can't make two tribes. And then he says, well, there's a little bit of a twist. There's actually going to be three tribes. Two tribes will have six people. One tribe will have one person. This one person will go and fend for themselves for the next 2-3 days. I'm thinking, holy crap, that's an interesting twist.
She likes exclamation points, okay?
No, I'm with you, Eliza. It's like broken glass. It's very grating.
I wonder how that's going to work. And then he tells us that Jeff says whichever tribe loses a member in tribal council, that's going to be the tribe that Julie goes into.
That's how Jeff talks also.
It's true. He's got a bit of the Shatner going on as well. Like, one more time. But no, and I think Anna's a big believer. Like, why use three words when you can use 50? And they're very, like, the decibel of them is very high. It's true.
Yeah.
Just because it's in there doesn't mean it's right.
Yeah. Okay.
he does that on purpose. He's got to do that on purpose.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know.
Like, that's how he keeps it. That's how he keeps it interesting after 32 seasons.
Okay. all right. Randy was fired up on Twitter. Here's what Randy had to say. Really going to miss Anna. Did not think she would rack up so many votes. Randy.
Yeah, it's a little obvious, but I mean, I've made a million boob jokes this evening. Yeah, so who might
judge? Capitalize rack. Yeah.
Just in case we didn't get it. Right.
In case we didn't get it. Yeah. All right. Russell Hantz. He was watching the episode last night.
Uh-huh.
He tweeted, why two hot girls in a row? Unhappy emoji.
No.
And he meant unhappy face. Unhappy face. He tweeted, I'm bummed out that Anna Kate is out. I feel like that was a bad move, but we will see. So he did not agree with the move.
No, he's making pouty face.
He's yelling too.
And so right away I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be interesting.
I can't take it. It hurts my ears, Rob. It hurts. Like, people are listening with earbuds walking down, you know, they're at work right now and they're like, ah.
No, they're not. Stop it, Angie. And then Russell Hantz said, Ty screwed her over by not doing what he said. And I don't think she was with him. She was trying to save her ass.
Well, I mean, there was no way in hell he was going to play that idol for her. So he was in the bottom of that line. I'm trying. So what was he thinking?
Yeah, I'm trying to, he's saying that it was a bad move to get Anna out, but then saying that Ty screwed her over by not doing what he said, but she was trying to save her ass.
He just wanted to say Anna and ass in the same sentence.
I don't know what he's trying to say. Let's take, Abby Maria. Abby Maria, woo! Who we will talk to soon. She said about Scott Pollard, size 18 shoes. That's amazing, Ty Trang. I know what you're thinking.
I think we were all thinking that, Abby.
Is that what?
Yeah, that's what they say. Big feet, big hands.
Yeah, big game, according to Angie Kontz.
Maybe I'm being blinded by the big feet. Who knows?
Feet big and long.
Okay. Then also, Abby Maria said, I thought Peter was going to say, Anna can win people over with her brains and her boobs. That would be very unprofessional for him to say that.
It would.
That's a doctor.
Yeah, he is a doctor. Yeah. He's got to go back to work. He can't be.
Yeah. I mean, he's not a plastic surgeon like Tarzan.
No, he is not. Yeah. He is not. He's an ER doctor. That's very serious business.
Mm-hmm. T-Bird, she was very fired up about the episode. She tweeted, Brains Beach, fire, food, water, and freedom from Tribal Council. Julia, I think you drew the winning ticket.
Yeah, and then she went into shock, so I don't know.
T-Bird also say, Chan Lo has chins low. Date with at Jeff Probst tonight. Chins low.
What? I don't get it. I don't even get it.
They're sad. Their like heads are hanging.
Oh, all right. Good one.
Rodney, he tweeted, if you're going home, just throw your shirt in the fire. F it. Hashtag Tribal Council. Now, and who was he advising to do that? Who did he want to see throw their shirt in the fire?
Anna. Yeah. For obvious reasons.
Yeah. Okay.
You better relax, bro.
Yeah. I think you better relax with that idea, Rodney. Take that easy.
Yeah.
Don't be pressuring Anna to take her shirt off at Tribal Council. Yeah. Highly inappropriate.
Get yourself at half mast, buddy.
Yeah. All right. And then let's see. Who else was tweeting? Oh, yeah.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Rupert. Tweets, they're better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
Okay.
Oh, pressure's on.
The pressure is on. The pressure is on.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I like this game.
All right. You don't think you like this game? I don't even like this game.
I like hearing other people do this game. I feel tremendous. Like I'm very competitive. I'm like, oh God, I can't be the one that loses this game.
All right. The game is, we have four tweets from Rupert. Three of them are real tweets from Rupert. One of them is a fake tweet from Rupert. Tweet number one, Rupert says, there's a lot of hugging going on. Let's see how long that hugging goes on. Okay. That's number one. Number two, you don't need exercise on Survivor. Go get firewood instead. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Number three, Laura says she agrees there's no need for exercise on Survivor.
Okay.
Number four, vote Laura back onto Survivor. Hashtag second chance.
Whew. There's a lot of Laura going on.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I was writing down little notes for myself as you said those. I'm taking this very, very seriously, Rob.
I would not expect anything different.
Okay. So the first one was about hugging. There's too much hugging. And he thinks that that's not going to last very long. I think Rupert struggled with the social aspect of the game. So I think he's probably talking about how they're going to turn on each other. That seems like a legit Rupert tweet.
Mm-hmm.
Getting firewood, that sounds very, very Rupert-like. Like, stop messing around and go do some real work.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say those first two are legit. The two Laura ones, I don't know. Because the Laura agrees you shouldn't exercise. Like, what does that mean? That sounds almost like Laura says stay home and eat bonbons. Like, is that, I don't know if that's a real one. But vote Laura back for second chance. You know what? I think Laura did not have a good experience on Survivor, and I would highly doubt that Laura even wants to go back. I'm going to say that the fourth one is the made up one. Is that right?
Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
Yes, yes. Laura did say that she agrees that there's no need for exercise on Survivor, but Rupert did not tell people last night to vote for Laura to go back on Survivor, hashtag a second chance. Rupert also did say it was a good night for Rupert tweets. He also did say, I want to be the first player to do 5 seasons. I feel like this last one doesn't count because I let Laura play.
Whoa, he let her play?
Yeah, he let her play. Now, hold on. So now if the first one doesn't, or if this last one doesn't count, does that mean that Rupert's only done 3 seasons, so he wants to go back 2 more times?
I guess.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't count. It doesn't count, right?
It doesn't count.
That's a lot of Survivor.
Yeah, that's a lot of Survivor for Rupert. So we'll mm-hmm. see.
That's too much Rupert for me.
He also
I gotta be honest.
He also says, I've been in these tribe shuffles. They can't be rigged. They're completely random. No one knows what happens, and they're all surprised. Feels like nobody was really questioning that. Seems like protests too much maybe with that, Rupert.
Yeah, did people think that they're rigged?
I don't know. Rupert was there for one of the weirdest tribe swaps in Survivor history between Mogo Mogo and Shapara when only Amber ended up on the new Shapara.
Yeah, so maybe a lot of people said, well, that was totally rigged.
No, no,
and
no.
He was like, no, that was not.
All right, that's Rupert tweets.
Tweets, baby. Woo-hoo! Tweets, Rupert. Tweets that are better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
Here's one other tweet. We have, for the first time, a Billy Garcia tweet this season. He says,
whoa.
This is all one tweet. My mother fell out of a mango tree once. Food gathers, stick around. I don't see throwing Ty under the bus working.
What the hell is that?
I like that my mother fell out of a mango tree once. It's a total non sequitur to open the tweet.
The whole thing is a non sequitur. Those are like 3 completely separate ideas that somehow makes up one tweet. That makes no sense.
Yeah. So again, hope Billy Garcia's mom is doing okay after the falling out of the mango tree.
That's pretty random and pretty severe. That's intense to fall out of a mango tree. Those things look pretty tall. You need a boost from a really tall guy even to get up there. So yeah.
Wu fell out of a papaya tree once.
Yeah, that wasn't good.
All right, Angie, and I got nothing else for you.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Yeah.
All right, Angie, what's the hashtag for this episode of the podcast?
Oh, I wasn't paying attention at all. Let me think.
All right.
It's like I was just on autopilot the whole time. It wasn't my best game.
No. Well, what do you think of maybe a forecast for next week? The coming new hottest relationship out there in reality TV. Hashtag Nebby.
Nebby. That'll do. You don't like Sky?
Well, I like Sky, but it's not as funny as Nebby.
Nebby's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I can go with Nebby. And it's easy to spell.
Yeah.
Like Sky, everyone will do Sky wrong.
Yeah.
Because it's not like the air that we breathe. It's like Ty and Scott, just for people who didn't.
Yeah, it would be what? S-C-A-I?
A-I. That's how
it's
I spell
ugly.
It.
That's ugly Sky.
It is. It's weird. It's like one of those new age names. Like, no, my name's Sky, but I pronounce, I spell it like a weirdo.
I could get behind it if it was S-K-A-I. But S-C-A-I, I'm out on that.
No, it's like sigh.
Yeah.
That's no good.
The stupidest thing I think I've ever heard.
Yeah, I got to agree. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Alicia. All right. Angie, great job. I'm sure the Fangies are very happy this week.
Oh, yay, Fangies. I love you, Fangies.
Okay. You could follow Angie on Twitter. She is at Angie Cons. Anything else you want to tell people to check out or look at?
No, I'm still slugging away, trying to get through my Big Brother watch so that I can get my Big Brother system underway. It's so many episodes, Rob. It's so many. So yeah. I'm really, really trying to get that off the ground for the summer.
Okay. In the diary room, are you hearing a lot of this?
Beth mentioned about the twist. I thought to myself, please, Jesus, I do not want to see a red buff. I don't want to go by myself. I want to have the time to start forming relationships with these new people.
It's a little bit like Nikki, but not. I can't take it anymore.
She's not dramatic like Nikki. You're so hard on Anna.
I am. I am hard on Anna.
Yeah. A lot of people are. A lot of people are. Okay. Angie, so great job here on the voicemails. Really always fun when we get together on a podcast. And I am looking forward to hearing about your character types this summer and hearing who will win Big Brother based on the system.
I am super excited about it. It's completely different. So I really did expect a lot of similarities, and it seems to be, it's a completely different game. It has completely different casting. So very cool. Can't wait to do it.
All right, Angie, great job. Thank you so much for coming on. We got a lot more coming up, of course. We're going to get back into Big Brother Canada this Friday. We're going to recap all of week 3. Angie, are you enjoying the Big Brother Canada this season other than Nikki?
I am loving it. Tim is a darling. I want to dunk him in my coffee.
Is he the Australian Tai Trang?
He is.
So
except yummier.
Yummier. Yeah. And we will talk about all that. I will speak with the latest player. Somebody got evicted from the Big Brother house while I was talking with Angie tonight. I will speak with that person on Friday morning, and that will be all part of our Big Brother Canada recap. And then no Amazing Race these next 2 weeks because of all of the March Madness happening. So we will get back into all of our Survivor stuff beginning next week with the Wiggle Room and why Anna lost with David Bloomberg, which should be very fun to talk that through. Was it just bad luck? Or as David was saying on Facebook last night, there is no bad luck on Survivor, or there's bad luck, but you can overcome it. Mm-hmm. So he'll tell us why. All right. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, again, thanks again to all of our patrons that have come on board recently and have been with us the whole way. Greatly appreciated. Find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron at robiswebsite.com/patron. Looking forward to reading your comments about all this at robiswebsite.com. And I'm going to take you out with, we get so many song submissions every week. We have, in honor of Angie's love of Scott Pollard, we have a song that is sent in from Bradley about Scott and his new bromance with Ty. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Dear little dude, you're one third of me, but I got a man crush, be your new BMC. I want you, Ty. Ty to be my guy.
Yeah.
I want your mangoes way up in those trees. Hey. I'll boost you up there with my size 18s. I want you, Ty. Ty, jovial guy.
Yeah.
How did we get here? I know. An unfortunate evacuation led us here. I want you, Ty, as my best friend. You and me could have a bromance.
Yeah.
I want your idol for Kyle Jason. You and me could have a bromance. Oh, Scott and a bromance.